Hello, Hunter. I suppose it's time for those useless defenders to broadcast their show for this week.
Yes, I hate them so much.
I do. I imagine them sitting in their coke den, smoking from their crack pipes and talking about things all entertaining. What happened when the youngsters of the day used to read the Times?
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome to Defenders of the Murph podcast, broadcasting from 3.2 miles above the surface of the Earth with a duct tape coolant tank and a curious knocking at the aft docking port. We'll get to that later, much like our theme. This is episode 4, Time to Terminate this Titanic Film featuring blue aliens and knocking it into the abyss. I'm your host, Above Average JJM Story.
And his co-host, Intertree Johnny Kelly.
Welcome to the Defenders of the Murph podcast!
We finally got past that hump of an intro there.
Yeah, third time's a charm.
Third
or four,
time.
3.2?
Three
are we 3.2 attempts?
It's 3.2 attempts to start the show, and now we're 3.2 miles above the surface of the Earth.
Well, if you couldn't tell by the interesting name of this week's podcast, we're mostly going to be talking about Avatar, mm-hmm. which we had the pleasure of seeing in full 3D.
Well, not full 3D for me. I didn't actually get to see it in proper 3D.
All right, I saw the 3D. My blind co-host saw very fuck all. Yeah. Right.
I lost my glasses. I bought a pair of glasses specifically to be able to see 3D films, and they were stolen from me. There's a story in it. I'm not going to go into the story, but they were stolen. You can mock me if you want.
No, you've mocked yourself enough.
Okay.
You were very sad about it. I'm not going to kick him out when he's down. Anyway, Avatar. Jim Cameron's latest cinematic thing.
Yes.
You mean it? 3D?
It was
3D. We watched it.
We did.
Were you entertained?
I was entertained, but there were some things that just sort of gritted on me.
I did see your tabbed list there.
I do have a list. I'm very organized like that, much like the show notes.
Yes.
We've got some news as well before we get into the main thrust of it.
Of course, news.
We have a store. Yeah. We have a store. If you go to our site and you click on the store link, there is a link to our store. It's an Amazon Associates store. You can see links to products that we've talked about in the show, and if you buy them, we get a little kick. Not much, like 5%, and it would be very nice to help us out. But yeah, the idea is over a period of time, we're going to see all the products that we've talked about and all the things that we've gone into, and it's sort of given us a bolster of an effect, because we see that we've actually talked about things.
Yeah, it's good to see it in a storefront. Plus, it beats those whoring bastards with their please donate button.
I don't know, we might become whoring bastards eventually.
No, but I like the idea that they don't need to donate, they just need to buy shit that they were probably already going to buy anyway, but they buy it from us so we get a little kickback.
But like, not much of a kickback.
Not much of a kickback, 5%. But, you know, we enjoy doing the show, we do the show for free, but
5% of a DVD that costs £4.98 is like 23p.
In fact, here's a great incentive. If you want the show to sound better, please buy shit so we can buy better recording shit.
Yeah, yeah. Shit leads to shit. Shit in, shit out, as they say.
Yeah.
But anyway, so have you got any points to make about the film?
Right, I'm going to backtrack here.
Oh.
Yes, one of James's legendary hypocrisy. Well, it's not really hypocrisy. I was judging the film before I saw it and basically bought into the whole, it's a bit like the Smurfs thing. it is a bit like the Smurfs, not even that, but it's awesome.
Really?
I
am quite surprised that you thought that.
I did. I really enjoyed it. It was, and it took me a while to reconcile whether or not it was the fact that it was in 3D.
Mm.
You know, was I just amazed by the fact that it was 3D, or was I amazed by the film itself? And then I got to the point where I realised it doesn't matter, because the film was designed to be the way it was.
Mm.
Okay, it was designed with 3D technology in mind. It was, it's a package. You don't dissect art and say, yeah, I like the painting, or, you know, it's, you know, because of the style or because of the colours you use. No, you view it as a whole. We viewed it as a whole. I feel enriched by the whole.
All right, so you enjoyed the film.
I did enjoy the film. No, that's not to say that I didn't have any problems with it. Nothing's perfect, well, apart from The Dark Knight. I'm more than willing to rip the piss out of it now, if you want to start.
Okay, well, I got a few points. I mean, it was a hodgepodge, the plot of the film. I mean, I have to say, the looks, even though I couldn't see proper 3D because of my, you know... Well, I have... that's a side topic, but I have bad vision. But
as opposed to good vision.
As opposed to good vision, or night vision.
Or rear vision's too good to enjoy it.
Or rear view vision.
Yeah.
Which was focused on a lot in... the film, for 3D effects, they did a lot of in the cockpit, rear view mirror, seeing the perspective of the person in the cockpit and the rearview mirror and then their controls. That happened about four or five times that I noticed, and it was like they're just showing that they can do angles and they can do reverse effects. It was pretty interesting. Did you notice that?
I did notice a couple of things. Like, even a couple of things that were unnecessary. What's his name again?
Who?
Sam Worthington, yeah. The half Terminator from Salvation, whatever you want to call him in the film. I can't remember his name in the film. Jake Sully.
Jake Sully.
There we go. He's named after the monster from Monsters, Inc.
Sully.
Yeah, right. Basically, Sully used to, part of the, throughout the film, we'd do this video log, which is a military reason. That's a by the by, that's a plot point. But the text around it and everything was sort of 3D for no reason.
Yeah, just to show you that it could be.
Yeah, it's like, we made this 3D.
There were a few little bits like that. There was a point where he's running around a cornfield and he kicks up some dirt and the dirt sort of flies in your face and you're like, yes, very good, that's 3D.
You know, really, actually, the one bit that annoyed me about the 3D was there's a bit where he's holding the gun and he sort of levers the gun over to the other side of the screen.
Yeah.
And the gun sort of like pops out at your face. That just looked a bit annoying.
That gun's firing at you? It's popping out in your face.
No, it wasn't firing. It was just like, it was turned like, oh, the barrel might hit me in the face. I just thought that was cheap.
Okay.
And the subtitles.
Subtitles?
Subtitles were in 3D. Whenever
Well, that's nice, though. I kind of like that.
That kind of annoyed me.
Really?
It made it harder to read.
I'm trying to remember what it is my eyes have. Astigmatism. That's what it is. I have astigmatism, and that causes me to see things sort of almost in double, almost all of the time. And as a result, the 3D, although it did look 3D, sort of looked not real. I mean, in your experience, did it look real?
No, there was always... And that was the thing, the biggest thing I had to get over in the film was over the first 10, 20 minutes. It was like, oh, everything's in 3D and everything looks a bit weird. You just sort of have to settle yourself and just focus on the film.
Oh, I just remembered the opening scenes, like whenever he's coming out of being in stasis in the big, long spaceship shot.
Yeah.
I did love that.
Oh, that was good.
Perspectives.
And it's very much like, wow, everything's in 3D. Mm-hmm. And it gives you an opportunity to get that out of your system so you can actually sit down and enjoy the film for what it is.
But the film is a hodgepodge of other films, references to many other things. I mean, there's a few examples. Dances with Wolves, Fern Gully, Gorillas in the Mist, Pocahontas. I didn't think of Pocahontas because I haven't actually seen Pocahontas, the Disney film.
I've seen Pocahontas. It's very much, you know, respect nature and, you know...
Yeah, and obviously...
I love story between two radically different cultures.
Yeah.
Although the love story sort of felt... the word contrived.
Contrived, really?
Yeah. I don't actually think it was entirely necessary.
And then the other film that I think it draws from a little, as you get nearer the end of the film, was Terminator 2. I think there were some very James Cameron-esque moments as you got to the
end. Oh yeah, James Cameron is all about the dehumanization of military hardware.
Mm.
Like, putting robots around people and, you know, taking, you know, the way, and it is social and political commentary. Mm-hmm. It's basically... Like, James Cameron is an outspoken against the Gulf and Afghan wars.
Mm.
And from what I've read or from what I've seen, and don't quote me on it, I can't really quote a particular article, but some of the things I've read, he's very much, he doesn't see it as fair. This whole shock and awe, in fact, they even say shock and awe in the film. He's very much against that, you know, bombarding the natives from far, far away. You know, I can almost see that. There's sort of no honour in that type of warfare. You have nothing on stake. The only people suffering are the people you're bombing the shit out of.
Mm-hmm.
And I can sort of see that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he does pull another type of iconography from it. Like, the tree falling was very, very 9/11.
By the way, at this point we have to let you know that there are going to be major spoilers here. I mean, we are going to give out major plot points and tell you most of what happened in the film in order to get our point across. So if you don't want to listen, we perfectly understand. You pussy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You wimped out. You know, we probably spoiled quite a lot of the film by this point anyway.
I don't think so. We've been sort of skating around things, but now with the tree fall you've just mentioned, I think
I revealed the tree fall before we said, oh, well, there may be spoilers.
Just before, but it's okay.
I know, but if you haven't seen the film, you've no idea what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The tree, like, well, oh, a tree fell over in the film, dearie me.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds a lot like the apocalypse.
Okay, Ferngully, I said that's in there. Ferngully was about a guy who gets miniaturized, and did you ever see it?
I did. I actually liked Ferngully.
Yeah, it was a very good film, but some of the elements of Ferngully, like in that film, he's touching some plants and they light up, and there's this whole sequence about how everything's really beautiful and lights up, and that's recreated when he first gets into the forest and meets... what's her name?
Blue Girl.
Blue Girl. we should really have these
Smurfette. That's what. That's it. Smurfette.
Yeah, of course. I'm going to go to IMDb because, you know, I'm not a database, and it is. So you can fill some time here while I type in IMDb avatar, or I could just talk about what I'm doing.
Was the soldier for the soldier, the evil major guy, whatever his name with the scars? I think he was Galgamar.
Galgamar?
Yeah, Galgamar. It's the villain from the Smurfs. Hey, there it goes.
Oh, of course.
It's a...
Sorry.
Nitini.
Ah, get them Nitini. Smurfs.
Nitini, is it? Is there an I at the end?
Natari?
Natari. Ah, oh, whatever.
Yeah, it's like an old console.
Yeah, Natari. Natari.
I'll play some Natari.
Gotta play some of Natari.
Yeah, and learn some basic cultures.
Yep. Anyway... Back to Natari.
So Natari, what was I saying about her though? See, that's the thing. Oh, yes. He first meets Natari, they're in the forest, and they're going through, and she's saying that he's a baby. He's like a baby, and he has to learn to not be like a baby. And he sees all the light up things and gets very excited by it. A lot of beauty. And it did show a lot of 3D effects again. In that section, going through the forests and trying to keep up with her and all this. But that was a Ferngully reference, I thought. Gorillas in the Mist, well, Sigourney Weaver, and she did seem to be loving it. Whenever she got back into the camp, he's able to negotiate. Yeah. They're going back as her avatar into the natives' camp. It just sort of reminded me of the Gorillas in the Mist. Yeah. She's sitting around with all, you know, and she's just so happy and sitting about, even though it's... a 3D animated character, so Sigourney Weaver just seemed very reminiscent.
Oh, they made her avatar look very much like her. But, you know, it's like Jim Cameron was writing, he says, I want this bit of the film to be like Gorillas in the Mist.
Mm.
Oh, I know what I'll do. I'll just go get Sigourney Weaver. We made a film together before, why the fuck not?
And then the Ferngully Dances with Wolves, of course, you know.
I can see that.
There's a lot of that. When they first meet and they have a discussion about whether or not they should be allowed.
At the same time, half of Dances of Wolves is Kevin Costner trying to get in with the Indian tribe. In this one, Sully just seems to bumblefuck his way into it. Oh, we've never seen a human warrior dream... They called them dreamwalkers or something?
Dreamwalkers.
We've never seen a human hunter dreamwalker before. Hey, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll let him join. You know, I was like, okay...
Well, I suppose. And that brings us, me and us, to one of the points is that this film, at no point, was unpredictable.
No.
No.
You sort of always knew what was going to happen.
And you could see the next scene, and you're just waiting for it to happen, and in some cases the suspense that was built up was just annoying, because the suspense was withholding the happy ending that was guaranteed to come.
Yeah. The thing about it, and the main obvious one was... these people are completely vulnerable when they're controlling the Na'vi, is it? The aliens? The Na'vi?
The Na'vi?
Is that what the aliens... Yeah.
See, we didn't do our research for enough to take the piss out of this film. But there you go.
See, if I'd just been my usual insulting self and just called them the Smurfs, we could have just slid on right past this. The people who knew what I was talking about, you knew what I was talking about, and I could have pretended I was just insulting the film.
Well, we'll call them the Na'vi, even though it might not be their name.
The Smurfs.
The Smurfs.
The Smurfs. Anyway, when the humans are controlling the Smurfs...
The custom-grown genetic altered to match the DNA of the host.
Yeah. Anyway, Smurfs. When they're controlling the Smurfs, they're very fucking vulnerable, and I was just waiting for the point in that film where that would become very apparent how vulnerable they are. They don't deceive that right at the end, but I always knew that was coming. It's like, of course you would hunt down your sleeping body and... you know, destroy it.
Yeah.
That's what you do. And they held that off to the film, but that did lead on to one of the more beautiful scenes in the film.
Which was?
When the side of the wee caravan, because it basically is a giant caravan they're doing this in at this stage, gets knocked in. And in case we haven't said this, the atmosphere is toxic to humans.
Although it seems to only be toxic to humans some of the time.
Yeah, they weren't really consistent. They started to go on about, oh, you'll be dead within 30 seconds, and that colonel guy kind of lasted like 2 minutes.
He was holding his breath. I saw him go and put his mask on and then go... So, yeah, but he was holding his breath for such a long time, and at the same time he was being very energetic. I don't know if he actually could have been holding.
Did he not get stabbed in that point with a knife?
Yeah, no, I mean, he didn't exhale.
But anyway, and there's a scene where...
he didn't swallow either.
Where Smurfette kneels down and touches, you know, Sully. When they
get intimate, whenever they mate for life?
No, I'm talking about at the very, very end.
Oh, at the very end?
Yeah, the mating for life bit was throwaway. You didn't need that.
That was a throwaway fight.
It's like, you know, we're now married. We had sex once and that was super.
But at the end?
Yeah. When he touches her face and it's like, I see you.
I see you.
All right. A child could have wrote the line, but
it
was still effective. it stirred up some emotional response in me.
It did me as well, but... I don't know. I mean, talk about contrived. I mean, the whole idea.
How did this happen?
Huh?
I'm just recognizing the conversation. How did this happen? Not even the plan, but the assumed way that the podcast was going to go was I was going to be super critical and spend my entire idea destroying the film. I didn't think I was going to be the main defender of the film, of defending it from you, the man that pretty much likes most things.
I do like most things.
Yeah.
But I was prepared to answer back to your criticisms, so I decided to investigate what criticisms there would be, which led me to have criticisms.
I like how it was. I assumed you were going to be critical, James, so I learned that the film isn't as great as I originally thought it was.
No, you assumed you were going to be critical, and then you decided to open your mind and let yourself not be as critical as...
Yeah.
We roll reverse for this one, ladies and gents.
No, I'm almost glad, because we were planning on doing this on the Saturday immediately after seeing it, and I really needed
What were you thinking? You said you had some thoughts, you said you had some criticisms.
Oh, my criticisms were pretty much the things I'm bringing up now. The plot was contrived. I felt like I was having an environmental... And I'm not an environmentalist. I would consider myself some sort of minor environmentalist. But I felt like I was having the message hammered into me with a big fucking three-dimensional hammer.
There were two moments in the film where they really did hammer that into you. They made reference to the dead planet where the Earth came from, and the fact that there was no green on our Earth anymore, and that, well, the humans always come and destroy everything that's natural. And it was very much in the style of Wall-E. Which did a lot of that too. It was like, oh, this is a post-apocalyptic. We all destroyed everything and couldn't keep it going. Look at where we are now. I mean, in a modern script, referring to the future and saying that we fucked up is just... we have the potential to fuck up, but it shouldn't be that pretentious about it.
No, I don't like the fact that it showed us with such contempt and lack of... You know, there was no hope in the film for us. That's what I really wanted to see. There wasn't a point in the film where we learned our lesson. One man or two men or three people in the entire human race seemed to learn.
I think Michelle Rodriguez is Trudy. She was an example of someone. Trudy was the sort of hard woman, helicopter pilot. She sort of did that sort of there's hope thing.
The thing that really wrecked it for Trudy for me, though, is she learned her lesson without any reason to learn her lesson.
She just said, I don't want to be involved in this, and then went away.
Yeah. And the simple fact was, she had no interaction with the Na'vi. She had no context for... Alright,
she saw the destruction.
Yeah. Well, but even before, when she broke them out and what they were planning... She didn't really seem to have any first-hand personal experience of them, so when she suddenly went, okay, I'm going to help you, I'm going to wreck my career, and we're going to steal this, and, you know, chances are I'm going to end up living with a gas mask on for the rest of my life or until they kill me, which they inevitably did.
Yeah.
There was no
character development there.
No, the same thing applies to Norm Spellman, Joel Murr's character in the film. He was the guy who was originally said to be the really knowledgeable guy who's done all the studies and had all the tests and been able to do all the environmental stuff and really get to know these characters. And he had no real part in the film other than to, at the start of the film, mock the new guy.
Well, he didn't mock. He started off as friends with him. Well, and then as Sully became more successful, there was the mocking.
Yeah.
But he had no noticeable arc.
He didn't do
it. He just showed up, and he seemed to be... And they showed the camp. They showed 20 or 30 of these people in the Na'vi bodies who were never mentioned again.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame. They could have done a heck of a lot more character development on the human side than they did.
Yeah. And it was a long film.
2 hours, 40 minutes.
Yeah, there was enough time for it. But, these people had all spent time with the Na'vi and had all spent time with the Na'vi bodies, yet had just seemed to disappear. For no reason.
Mm. Background.
Background. And it showed the scene where they showed them all getting into the cab and going to sleep and they all waking up in the beds and stuff like that. And it was like, rows of them!
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What happened to them? Like, where did they go?
The entire community?
Yeah. The entire community of the Dreamwalkers.
Mm.
Like, they just, it's like, aha.
Oh, the people who just are, they just didn't.
They didn't feature at all. Well, we're just meant to assume that the two new guys and the one seasoned doctor were the only people that felt any love for the Na'vi. We're just, they said, oh, here it is,
It was nice to see Michelle Rodriguez, though. I do like her.
Yeah, she's good and shit. And she's hot in a sort of gruff way.
Mm. I've already covered the rhetoric about humans destroying their own planet. That's okay. This was actually something I thought was amazing about this film. This idea of the global consciousness network of the entire planet and all animals and creatures within it, and the fact that they could link to each other and completely integrate their thoughts and then control each other and understand each other implicitly. I thought that was cool.
Oh yeah, they actually I was reading about that. They basically got a botanist to look up on this and sort of investigate.
Well, you've got your mushroom fields. Yeah. Mushrooms. Yeah. Mushrooms are the biggest living organisms in the world. There's an entire field connects across miles, and it's all one organism. So it's probably similar to that.
Yeah, but they did investigate that. There's a book, The Biology of Avatar, and it's very much they very much designed an ecosystem around it.
It was the moment that they said in the film that it was a network.
Yeah.
That just sort of exploded my head. Yeah, and they're able to upload their consciousness and restore their memories of their ancestors and still communicate with them.
Yeah.
Amazing. As a natural mechanism as well.
Although, did you not think the bit that allowed them to transfer the human mind into the Avatar mind was a bit fucking convenient?
It was and it wasn't. If they've developed technology enough to allow someone's mind to control across a wireless link for miles, another body and soul, and for them to get all of the feeling and interaction from it, it's not so much of a stretch to say that you can make that permanent.
I know, but it's convenient that the Na'vi just somehow have an ability to do this.
Yeah, why would they have the ability to do this if they haven't come across humans before?
Yeah, it's like, oh, we know this will work, and they're advising, this may not work. Her body's like, how the hell do they know? Have they done this before?
No. I suppose it raises the question of, if one of them dies...
But it would pick up on the emotions from the amount of times that the creature had interfaced with the tree anyway.
They
do it through their big dreadlock.
Yeah, the big tree. Big tree. Tree of Souls. Big and pink. But Blue Aliens.
Blue? No. That's not taken away from the film. We're just sort of focused on the negative. The film is a spectacle to behold. The film is designed to be spectacular and it succeeds. The plot, yes, while simplistic and with many major holes, it's a deeply enjoyable movie. I came out feeling uplifted, if not half crushed at the same time, by the lack of respect shown by the humans and no sort of arc of redemption for any of them apart from the main couple of characters who were, in all fairness, didn't really need redeeming anyway.
No. Well, the argument was that indoctrination is the problem, and you need to go into it with a completely fresh mind. That the only person that can truly understand something is someone who hasn't built up a prejudice.
Yeah.
And that's who he was, because at the start of the film, you learn that his brother died, and he's a twin, and although he doesn't have the use of his legs, his mind works fine, and he's able to go in and take over the control of his brother's avatar. Avatar, in this case, if you don't know the plot point, you probably will by now, but it allows you to remote control a body of one of the aliens that they're going to talk to through your mind. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the central point, is if you don't allow yourself to become indoctrinated, you can really implicitly learn a culture and understand how its beauty.
Oh, you can see that, and the hammer that in, dude. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, oh, he hasn't done the books, he hasn't learned the language, he hasn't been in the training, he hasn't logged any of the hours on the simulators, mm-hmm. and they hammer it in, that this man is basically going in with no preconceptions about mm-hmm. what these people are. You know, and...
It's anyway. Good.
That's good.
That's a good thing. But, yeah, you were saying they work with botanists, they also work with linguists. The language that they use is one that, you know, they consulted with a number of different people, and they actually developed a whole language.
For, yeah, 3,000 words.
Mm.
3,000 words, and then some Jim Cameron made up on the spot.
Mm.
But, yeah, there's a basic language of 3,000 words based on some African dialects, I believe.
Mm-hmm. But something that would have naturally grown, and something that fits to the environment and the community. And, yeah, it's just quite interesting that they did so much work on the little details. Yeah.
But at the same time, as amazing as the film was, I do think it's going to be forgotten. I think it's just going to be known as the first major 3D epic. Because I already know about 3 or 4 other films that are coming out in the next year, or the next 2 years, that are going to be 3D. George Lucas is already planning the 3D, the Star Wars saga.
Mm.
I know that the new Spider-Man film, mm-hmm. the new Spider-Man reboot, is going to be 3D. Probably the next Dark Knight, the next Batman film, is going to be 3D.
And the good news is, ladies and gentlemen, that I will have a replacement pair of glasses by then. Yeah.
Transformers 3 is probably most definitely going to be 3D.
I mean, where is he going to go next?
Yeah.
He has to go 3D.
Now my explosives are going to 3D. All hail Michael Bay.
The reason they're there in this film, back to Avatar, the reason they're there is apparently to mine some mineral called unobtainium.
Worst name ever!
Unobtainium, which for some reason is quite unobtainable. And
they don't explain why it's so fucking expensive.
They don't explain why they're there to get it. They don't explain what it's used for. They don't explain what its cost actually is.
What they need to do is a throwaway line. Oh, this is what allows us to travel fast at night. Or this is our power source.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
if they gave some reason why they're there on that planet, making people go
unobtainium.
To get unobtainium. This is the reason why we're here. This is the reason your research doesn't count, because we need to get unobtainium.
Only slightly.
Why?
Only slightly.
Shut up, it's a plot.
Only slightly more expensive than rarium.
Rarium,
yeah.
Or hard to get him.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, there's plenty of plentium.
There's plenty of plentium and quite a lot of abundantum. yeah. So, yeah, the name of the thing and the fact that they don't explain why they need it, and it's just not very...
What were we expecting? But, you know, once again, we're focusing on it now. I don't want anyone to come away from this podcast thinking that the film is not worth seeing.
Definitely see it, and definitely see it in 3D.
Oh, yeah.
See it to be aware of its criticisms, but also take with you some of the ideas that it represents and the future that it sort of opens up. I mean, there's going to be a lot of changes to the way films are done.
I'd really like to see it in 2D, but I don't think I would want to.
I kind of want to, because...
You want to see if the film still is effective in 2D.
I've heard that it is. But I've heard that if you watch it in 2D, you see moments in the film where it was very obvious that it was set up to be for 3D.
Yeah.
And you're just sort of not getting proper, experience. But the CGI for the actual aliens themselves, the Na'vi.
Oh, no, that was pretty good.
They had perfect expressions. You could tell their emotion.
That's because they worked very hard on the whole recording of the faces. I read about it. I can't go into too much detail because I briefly read it in between calls and work today. Basically, I believe they had sort of very small cameras placed on the faces of the actors to capture response expressions as well, and it was very well done.
Mm-hmm.
You did believe at certain stages they were a character, and that's an important thing.
Definitely. But then what does that mean for the future? I mean, films that come, I mean, could you just take a selection of emotional reactions from an actor and then use that actor in any way you want?
No, just because it's well done once doesn't mean,
because they worked on it specifically for that task.
Everybody remembers Jar Jar fucking Binks.
He was the same people going to knock down a tree?
Yeah.
Giovanni Ribisi?
Ribisi? Yeah. Ribisi. Chip from Gone in 60 Seconds and Phoebe's brother from Friends.
Peter Selfridge is the name in this film, and he was a dick.
He was a dick
out and out, but he was also a dick with contradictions. This guy forwarded the plot in ways that made absolutely no sense. He was completely arguing in one direction and then all of a sudden said, oh, you got an R.
Yeah.
To do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, no, his whole point was because his whole point was all about, you know, trying
to... shareholders and making sure, you know, your research doesn't mean anything. We're here for unobtainium. That's the only thing we're here for. Oh, but actually, no, go and see if you can negotiate something. Contradiction. The man was a contradiction. Did he? No, he was shipped out.
No, you saw him being shipped out.
He didn't seem to be remorseful, did he? Or was he?
No.
He looked back.
Okay.
What does that mean?
No. Oh dear, I'm looking back. No, his responses had no meaning. He was basically there to forward the plot. He was a very two-dimensional character.
Yeah, it's like, no. Yes.
No. I am corporate fuckhead. See me roar. That he could have been played by 20 different guys.
That's true.
You know. And Giovanni Ribisi, you know, he can act, he can play different parts, but he was just there just to say, you know, we needed someone to represent the evil corporation, that will be you.
Mm-hmm.
You will spout slogans and our corporate propaganda.
Yeah. Let's see, I think I've got through most of my list.
Oh, I've got other stuff.
Oh yeah, no, I'm just saying my wee list here. Plot points were largely predictable, and by the end the suspense angle was starting to get annoying. I was awaiting the happy ending that was pretty much guaranteed. Which I've said already.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Well, they escape after being captured. They're put in a prison cell, and they're there for all of 5 minutes whenever Trudy comes along and lets them out. And then they're going down a corridor, and they get to the end of this corridor, and everybody's with them, including the scientist guy who's sympathetic to the whole thing. And then he says, no, you stay here. I need someone on the inside. And then leaves.
Yeah.
Do they not have security cameras in this massive industrial complex?
Apparently not. No, this is... And they managed then to steal what can only be described as a probably multi-million dollar helicopter.
Does it not have a locking key?
Oh, it gets worse. Then they go and lift this highly expensive trailer with obviously the very expensive transmission sighting device.
The wireless technology.
Which seems to... And none of these devices appear to have any sort of method for tracking at all, regardless of whether or not one is a mast fucking a transmitter.
Oh yeah, good point.
Like, could they
not pick up the signal? No, you couldn't. You know why you couldn't? Because whenever you got near the tree, it all went messed up and the instruments didn't work anymore. That's why they brought it there, remember?
Yeah, but then wouldn't the instruments that let them, you know,
broadcast?
Yeah.
Also be fucked up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shouldn't the smurfaces that went anywhere with the tree sort of just completely fucked up and collapsed onto the floor?
And there was another ridiculous throwaway line, which was, this is the one with the least bugs. And then there were no bugs ever.
Yeah. So I sort of half glitch to appear. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
that sort of wrecked our union / marriage / accident.
Oh, it was just too much. Well, that's the end of my list. But the video log thing was pretty good. I mean, the development on how you could predict it was going to happen, but it was nice that it did. It's one of those things where you're like, I hope they do this because it would be what would happen. And he started talking about how he couldn't tell what was real and what wasn't anymore. The fact that he didn't have use of his legs in the real world meant that whenever he had all of the activity and all of the training that had been given, and he went back to the Navi character, he felt like that was him.
Yeah.
And you could see why, because he didn't want to be himself.
I can see that. In real life, he was nothing really. And this is horrible. I'm not saying this is anything that took away from paraplegics, but he was nothing but a piece of meat on a chair.
Aye.
He lived for his avatar life.
Yeah.
And
That curious knocking might be about to begin on our half talking bite, or there's some laughter coming.
A creepy child laugh.
Anyway, any more things that you have about?
No. Well, but once again, I have to reiterate, please just go see the film.
Go see the film.
Judge
Make
it for
up
yourself.
Your own mind, yes, indeed.
It has the power to change opinions. It changed mine.
It allowed me to be a critic for once, which I don't often do.
No, but you had to. Well, not had to. I sort of forced in that position. Taking the exact opposite position to the one you thought I was going to take and were preempting.
Well, we have a segment, the first segment of probably many segments that we'll be doing, but it's James's segment this week, and it's called
Comic Book Cranium Crown.
If you didn't hear that, that was
Comic Book Cranium Crown,
which was Comic Book Cranium Crown.
I'll go explain it. I'm sure they heard.
Comic Book Cranium Crown.
Yes, this is the moment of the show which I dedicate completely to my love of comic books. And this week, I think once again, we're going to be up. I'm going to be having a quick look at the upcoming Heroic Age in Marvel Comics. Basically, it's the idea of focusing on what comics did best and has sort of disappeared in the last even, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And that's making heroes heroic again.
Oh.
Which...
So they've been vilified?
Darkened.
Darkened.
Almost tainted. Nothing's clear-cut anymore. Nothing's good versus bad. It's all different shades of grey. Especially in the last couple of years with Civil War and maybe some of the other crossovers. But, but it's time to get back to what makes comics great. And that's inspiring characters teaching people to do the right thing.
Okay, then let your comic book cranium crime begin.
Sort of at the beginning. At the minute we're actually through Siege. Siege is due to be a 5-part miniseries, currently written by Bendis, as I've already spoken before. It's about the original Avengers coming back to overthrow the evil Norman Osborn, who is trying to destroy Asgard, which suddenly appeared in Ohio, I believe. Basically, it's Norman Osborn's psychotic desire to control everything powerful on the planet and sort of close in his domain. We see Thor. Thor's back. We have Captain America, the non-Bucky Captain America, back to being Steve Rogers, even though it seems that after, due to the advanced previews of Avengers, we see that it's going to be Bucky Cap in the Avengers. Although they have hinted, I think the last image I saw of the Secret Avengers previews was Steve Rogers, but is it going to be Steve Rogers' Cap? Probably not. I think we're going to see Bucky Cap for the next couple of years, because it's a nice change. In case you are wondering who Bucky is, Bucky is Captain America's original sidekick from World War II, who was brainwashed by the Soviet Union, or maybe the Nazis, I can't remember. I haven't bought the trade paperback yet. He was given a metal arm, only to get his memory restored. He would not remember he's Bucky, but suffers from an insane guilt for being an assassin for the last 40 years, who the Soviets would occasionally unfrost to take out to kill people. After Steve Rogers was killed by the amazing time-traveling bullet at the end of the Civil War, which sent him about exploring his own life, so the Red Skull could try and steal his perfect super soldier body, which didn't really work out, followed by Bucky Cap. Steve Rogers came back, only to say, I'm not going to be Cap anymore, only for Siege number one to say, I'm going to be Cap, but just this one time, waiting for the inevitable time that he's going to be Cap again.
And that was this week's
Comic Book Cranium Crown.
Oh yeah.
Yep. It's quite a feat what you do and what you have in your head.
Well, I do try.
Yeah. Well, we mostly devoted it to Avatar this week. There was the comic book Ukrainian Crown, which I don't understand. And I will over time. I will over time. I promise you that.
Well, when I pick up the Captain America Reborn trade paperback and maybe the Civil War trade paperback, it's just going to be thrown at you.
Yeah.
Maybe even I'm going to have to pick up a couple of trade paperbacks of Brubaker's run on Captain America before and after Bucky Cap, just to see, because you need to see how he gets his memory back, which is some sort of inexplicable use of some sort of infinite cosmic cube. But Brubaker, that may sound like absolute bug. Brubaker has made Cap interesting and relevant again for the first time in about 20 years. From what I've heard, it's all good. I would recommend you read his run. Which is strange, because this is coming from a non-American. But once again, Cap, although they give him a very patriotic and maybe even hateful name at this juncture in time, America's not so favourably frowned upon. Captain America does not represent America as is. Captain America represents the idealism that was America as it began with. He represents freedom, independence, and, you know, all the things that America...
Truth, justice,
all the things that America wanted to be. And has been not afraid over the years to pinpoint the current incarnation of America's many, many shortfallings. Anyway...
Invincible. I did get to the point where you were referring to last week, the changeover, the bit that made you go wow and love the thing as a new entity, and I have to agree, it was quite the plot twist.
It was. In case you haven't picked up, Omni-Man, murderer of the Guardians of the Globe, which is the Invincible universe, is version of the Justice League / Avengers. In fact, it's more like the Justice League. It's more like the Justice League because it had obvious parodies of Justice League members. War Woman was obviously Wonder Woman. It all but name very much categorizes Wonder Woman. Apart from they made her a lesbian, which probably would have shocked most people anyway, because Wonder Woman's always came off as being a bit lesbianish, as she hates all men. You got the Shapesmith, is it? No, no, Shapesmith comes later. You got the Martian, who's basically the Martian Manhunter. You have the Immortal, who is sort of Superman, even though Omni-Man, sort of Superman, sort of weird. He's maybe more of a Captain America allegory, because as a representation, he looks a shitload like Abraham Lincoln, but really buff. And the comic book even suggests at certain stages that he may have been Abraham Lincoln.
I'm sure I'll get to that. And then there was the Flash.
What was the Flash name? Johnny Quick, was it? Or
something like that.
Johnny Quick, and you had the Batman allegory. I can't remember his name.
Well, I'm sure
but
you can find
that's
it.
The one thing about Invincible. It's fresh, it's well written, it's clever. You know, you find yourself actually laughing out loud at some of the lines that come in it. It's just because it's very cleverly written. Even some of the names, like, you know, Duplicate.
You know, there was a good joke there, near that that moment where Omni-Man did his terrible deed. What's her name?
Duplicate. Adam Eve.
Adam Eve.
Yeah, we're going to play on Adam and Eve.
Atom Eve. Oh, yeah. But she walks in and her boyfriend and...
Rexplode.
And Rexplode is having a bit of a happy time with Duplicate. But there was more than one of her.
More than duplicates.
You see. But duplicates.
And eventually you will run into... If you keep reading the series, if you start to start, you will run into her brother, Multi-Paul.
Multi-Paul. we are getting a low battery warning on our recording device.
Well, it looks like we've hit the 42-minute mark anyway.
Well, I got one more thing to add, and if it gets cut off, then of course it won't be added. But Windows Mobile Series 7 phones.
God, don't make me beat myself to death with my own empty coat ball.
There was a demo that we were watching earlier this evening. Windows Mobile 7 Series phones are beginning to be announced and shown. For what the concepts are going to be. They're very much like a Zune HD interface, a bit more panelled up than the Zune HD interface. And James has a few comments. I kind of like the concept. It's a hell of a lot different than Windows Mobile as it is today. But go ahead.
It's dreadful. It's a dreadful piece of software. The man that designed the GUI for that should be taken out and hanged from the lamppost by his testicles.
What's particularly bad about it there?
Oh, the fucking panel things. The tiles. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll use the business angle. The fucking tiles. The main interface looks just annoying. It looks terrible. It's ugly as sin. They should never have got rid of the cross-media bar. Fine, I saw the previous version, and I think they could have prettied that up a bit and made it a bit more simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it was a much prettier interface than what they have now.
Mm-hmm.
I like the... don't get me wrong. I'm purely designing on a design front. Some of the functionality in it looks very good. The Zoom interface, the Wi-Fi, you pointed out the Wi-Fi
sync.
The Wi-Fi
something
sync.
Something that an iPhone does not do. It'll allow you to transfer your music, your videos, your pictures, and pretty much anything that you transfer to and from the device over the Wi-Fi connection in your house. You don't have to use a cable, which is just lovely. It also updates podcasts that way, which the iPod doesn't do.
But...
and the iPhone.
At the same time, it looks incredibly... it doesn't look very intuitive. That was my... if I had to say my one criticism of the design itself, doesn't look necessarily very intuitive. It doesn't look like something you'd naturally... the bits really showing the photographs,
mm-hmm.
and they keep flicking light. They get to this bit and they get cut.
Out of
their arse, they pull out a Facebook page in that bit, and it's just...
well, the way they view it is that the whole thing is like a long, like a tapestry almost, like all of the functions go from one side. I'm holding my hands in the air, subtitles.
Yeah, it's very Tony Blair of you.
Very, very Tony Blair.
Yeah, he was very hand signal oriented.
Or Richard Nixon.
Or Andrew Mallet.
I am not a crook. This interface, it shows you like one slice of an entire tapestry. You slide across to the right or left to reveal the functions along that stream, and that happens on each of the different tiles that you go into, and you can stream across. And then there's a sort of crossbar type interface for some functions, but not as good as what it was.
Plus, at the same time, there should have been 4 or 5 functions on a bar which should have never moved.
Yeah, they have search, the start button, and a back button. That's the only major hardware buttons they have at the moment. There doesn't seem to be a consistent phone button, but that'll probably be added by hardware manufacturers. I think they'll do something themselves.
Oh, they may do, but I just think it should be built into the interface.
It's not done yet. It is still just demo, but we'll see what happens.
There should have been a hotlink to phone calls, text messages, contacts, and maybe a couple of other more useful apps.
There's probably hardware shortcuts to do it. Like for the iPhone, for example, you don't you have to go back to the home screen to be able to make a call. But if you double tap the home button, it will bring you to your favorite contacts list, and you'll be able to ring people from there.
Mm.
And there's little functions. I mean, it'll probably be hardware things, shortcuts you can set up. But yeah, it's not all over the interface. It's not unified, but. There you go. We will put a link to the video that we're talking about. One of the interesting features of this video is the woman, who is a yes woman in every single way.
Oh yeah, she said yes to somebody to get that job.
She just... it's one of the most annoying things about that video. I mean, you just want her to stop talking about how things are great or awesome or incredible or, oh my goodness, that's so... oh, isn't that... oh.
It's just, I thought if I saw another picture of that kid's that guy's twins, I was going to barf.
Oh no, that's not fair.
Oh, this is my real...
they're only children. They don't have an understanding of your hatred.
I don't hate them. It was like, oh God, yes, we've established you have children. We don't need to see any more.
It is a bit odd. It is a bit odd that people will willfully put up their young children on their Facebook profiles.
Right? It's just like you're talking to somebody. It's like, look, this is my kid. This is my kid. And they're like, there's my kid. And they're just like, oh, there's another kid there. And it's like, I'm not interested in seeing pictures of your child.
Although sadly, in this world, there will always be someone that is.
Yes. Oh, fuck. Not even they are. They're just better at acting than I am.
What do you mean? What?
Well, I'm interested in saying, oh, well, it seems it's nice to see them grown up. Not like, oh, this is us in skiing in Switzerland. And, oh, look at the little school show. Oh, look at the little booties. Aren't they cute? Aren't their booties cute? And this is Halloween looking like a little fairy. It's like, no! No, 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 no!
And with that, we're going to end the show. Thanks for listening. We went to, well, I'm going to tell you because I like statistics, 48 minutes, 35 seconds, 0.9, whenever I was talking to you there, but it went further because time does. It's a linear process.
It is.
Unless you're a scientist who is investigating time travel.
Yes, please.
Let's not go into that, though.
No, we'll see that on the show. Right, well, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Geronimo! And goodbye, cunts.